Be lovely to be here. I've really enjoyed having your company already. I'm really impressed that I'm jealous. You've got a lovely church building and a massive car park. I mean, I live in Cardiff these days. There's no parking anywhere. My church plant doesn't have a building, and we're currently meeting in a hotel, and we're going to be moving to a school in a few months' time in the area. So very jealous, but lovely to be here with you. Lloyd told me that I was speaking after you'd eaten, which I always find a bit of a worry because it's the graveyard shift, isn't it, when you've got food sat in your... Thank you, some interaction. Some food stuck in your belly and you're starting to feel dozy. So bear with me, work with me, won't you? I was also glad to see that you've got the right title up there. That is what I was thinking of speaking on. As we draw near to Easter, fake news or fact, is the resurrection of Jesus true and does it matter? For fake news, that's a phrase that I don't remember hearing a few years back anyway. It's a relatively new phrase, isn't it? But we're still hearing a lot about it. I was reading up about it today that I think it's WhatsApp are developing a new plug-in to their app so that people in India can detect fake news during the election cycle that's coming up. I was reading an article also saying that in the States in particular, fake news is becoming such an issue. It's actually becoming a subject they're studying in colleges. There's been a working group set up by Parliament at the tail end of last year, I think it was, to discuss the impact of fake news because people are so worried about it and it's so dangerous. And fake news is dangerous, isn't it, if you think about it? It's not like a fairy tale or fiction, which everybody knows is a made-up story. Fake news is untruths masquerading as truths. It's stuff that's put across as reality, where actually it's a lie. It's far worse than fairy tales and fiction. And because of that, labelling something as fake news has become a way to shut down conversation and shut down debate, isn't it? Certain public figures you might know well, I won't mention their names just in case, but they've become very good at trying to shut down conversation and shut down debate by saying that an opposing view is, oh, it's fake news. And immediately what we're meant to do then is completely ignore that view because it's all been made up. It's hard for run-of-the-mill people in the street like you and me to figure out what's fake news and what isn't. And that's why there's a lot of talk these days about fact-checking things. And what I'm encouraged by is that in these days of fake news that you're hearing more and more about, people aren't giving up on the fact-checking. The article I read recently in the New York Post, I think it was, also mentioned the fact that in these days of fake news that's on the increase, in the States anyway, apparently, in universities, journalism majors are also on the increase because as the fake news increases, people are wanting to know how to figure out what's true. They're wanting to learn how to fact check. People aren't giving up on figuring out what the truth is, and I'm encouraged by that. I'm encouraged by that because some things really are worth fact checking. Some stories I hear and read about in the media, I think I really don't care if that's true or not, especially if it's to do with certain celebrities. But other things you hear, you think, yeah, that's really worth checking the facts on. Some things are worth fact-checking, and I want to say tonight that the resurrection, the accounts of the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead in the New Testament are worth fact-checking. You know, I've had friends and colleagues over the years who said things like, oh, all the stuff in the New Testament is fairy tales. But actually, it's not at all logical to think the stuff in the New Testament is fairy tales or fiction. It's written as history. 1 billion people in this world believe these things in the New Testament are true. And many millions of people in history have believed they're true because they're written down as if they're true. It's not logical to say the stuff in the New Testament is fiction or fairy tale, but it could be fake news. It's either fake news or it's fact. The New Testament is dangerous. The New Testament really is dangerous because these are either terrible falsehoods masquerading as truth, or these things are truths which, when you grasp them and believe them, will transform your life and your future, and Christians believe your eternity. Think about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. I'm assuming everybody knows what I mean by that there was a man, Jesus of Nazareth, 2,000 years ago, who claimed to be the Son of God, did many wonders, died on a cross, and his followers said that on the third day he came bodily back to life again. He was raised from the dead. Think about what it means if that's fact, if it's true. It means there is a God. It means there is a supernatural realm. There are things that can't be explained by scientists in lab coats with their goggles. It means that there is life after death. Jesus has proved it by dying and becoming alive again. It means that Jesus told the truth in everything he said. Why would God raise this man from the dead if he hadn't spoken the truth? Everything in the New Testament that Jesus said is true if he rose from the dead. Consider the alternative. If the stories about the resurrection are fake news, Christians are the saddest of the sad. No offense. And that's putting it politely. Paul says this, the Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 17, this is. If Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile, and you are still in your sins, then those who have fallen asleep, that is, died, in Christ have perished. If in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. If these things in the New Testament aren't true, they're not just nice fairy tales, they're fake news, they're delusions, they're false, and they're dangerous. And it only really makes sense to reject Christianity, and I mean all of Christianity, and everything that Christ has said. And that means, I would suggest, that lack of interest in these stories about the resurrection isn't logical either. It's absolutely worth deciding where you stand on whether these things are true, because they're either a terrible falsehood or the most wonderful truths in history. And I just want to present four basic facts tonight to kind of try and help us in our fact-checking about these stories about the resurrection. Four basic facts that, from the reading I've done and the scholars I've read, the majority of historians and scholars would agree with. And by the majority, I mean the majority of scholars, theologians, historians, whether they believe in the Bible or they don't believe in the Bible, whether they're skeptical or whether they're believers, the vast majority of them would hold to these four things as facts. And these things I think will help us in our fact-checking. And I want you to be thinking, if this is true and if this is a fact, if it does stand up to scrutiny, what are the implications for us, for me? Fact one. Let's start with the real basics. Jesus was killed by crucifixion. The Gospels in the New Testament were written as history. And that chapter I read from 1 Corinthians 15, you read these words right at the start of the chapter. Paul said, "For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12. Then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep." Those words that Paul quoted are probably an early Christian creed that probably was in existence within a couple of years of Jesus' death on the cross. Christians have believed, and non-Christians have believed, right from those early days that Jesus really did die on a cross. Very few people dispute that these days, because ancient historians back it up. Tacitus, the Roman historian, said Christ suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius. The Jewish historian, Josephus, said Pilate condemned him to a cross. And the Jewish Talmud, Jewish tradition, said Yeshua, that's Jesus, was hanged on a tree. Jesus of Nazareth died on the cross. And despite some frankly crazy theories, like those that he lost consciousness on the cross after being flogged and beaten to within an inch of his life and then hung to suffocate and bleed and dehydrate and then put in the tomb for 3 days, he then revived. I mean, apart from crazy theories like that, pretty much everybody accepts that Jesus died on the cross. Bart Ehrman, you may have heard of, he's a very skeptical liberal scholar, doesn't believe the Bible, but he says that it is an indisputable fact that Jesus of Nazareth was real and died on the cross. That's fact one. Fact number two. The disciple, you might think this is really basic stuff, but hopefully it gets a bit more involved and get you thinking a bit more. Fact two, the disciples believed that he rose from the dead and appeared to them. Well, obviously they did. They're his disciples, right? But no, when I say the disciples believed that he rose from the dead, by believed, I mean really believed. They literally staked their lives on it. They were willing to die for this truth that they proclaimed that Jesus had been dead and was now alive. And we might say, yeah, hang on, people can die for a lie. People do it all the time. Think of those 9/11 terrorists all those years ago who flew the planes into the towers. They did that believing that they were doing good and that by doing it they would go to paradise. And I very much doubt that anybody in this room believes that was true, that they were doing it and that was leading them to paradise. They died for a lie. People die for lies all the time. Yeah, but the difference is here that the disciples, the 11 remaining disciples, were in a position to know absolutely for sure, one way or the other, whether Jesus of Nazareth really rose from the dead or not. People will die for lies all the time, but they don't die for something they know to be a lie. And the disciples would have known. Some people say, maybe they hallucinated. Maybe they were all suffering from delusions. What, all of them? All 11 disciples having exactly the same hallucination or the same delusions? That just doesn't happen. And what about the 500 people all at once that Paul speaks about in the letter to the Corinthians who saw the risen Jesus? And incidentally, that was written about 20 years after Jesus' death, which means it was fact-checkable. It was falsifiable. People could have gone up to the Apostle Paul and said, go on then, Paul, tell me who the 500 are. I want to go and talk to them about it. Easily could have been proved untrue. Fact-checking isn't a 21st century phenomenon. People have been doing it through the centuries. And people did it back then. No, the disciples believed that Jesus rose from the dead. And pretty much everyone agrees that the disciples really believed that. Some people think they're wrong. But pretty much everybody agrees the disciples really believed that Jesus rose from the dead. That's fact two. They're very basic facts, aren't they? Fact three I want to draw to your attention is the conversion of Jesus haters and Jesus doubters. There's two people in particular I want to mention. One of them I already mentioned this evening, the Apostle Paul. Of course, he wasn't the Apostle Paul to start with. He was the Pharisee, Saul of Tarsus. He was, as you may well know, a persecutor of the church. He hated the name of Christ, and he hated Christians to the point that he arranged and witnessed the execution of people who professed to be followers of Jesus. He went from persecutor to missionary pretty much overnight. He had everything to lose by becoming a Christian and nothing to gain. How on earth do you explain that? That Saul of Tarsus, who hated Christ, after Jesus' death, became a follower of Jesus? You can only explain it by something massive happening. And that something massive is recorded in Acts, when the Apostle Paul is confronted with the risen Jesus. Paul believed with his everything that this Jesus he used to hate had risen from the dead. The other example of someone who's not so much a Jesus hater but a skeptic is the brother of Jesus, well, technically the half-brother of Jesus. Jesus had a number of brothers, and one of his brothers was James. If you have siblings, you know what it is to grow up in a house and share a house and share a table and share a bedroom, probably, with another sibling. James shared a bedroom, and he shared a table, and he shared life with Jesus. And yet we read in the Gospels that none of Jesus' brothers believed in him. Presumably they didn't hate him. They thought he was nuts at times, but they probably loved him. They didn't believe he was the Son of God. And yet James, the brother of Jesus, after Jesus' death on the cross, becomes the head of the Jerusalem church. Not only does he become the head of the Jerusalem church, but he goes on to suffer for Christ, and history tells us he was martyred for his faith. He died because he proclaimed that his brother was the Son of God who had died on the cross and risen from the dead. How do you explain that? Someone who didn't believe in Jesus for decades and then suddenly does. How do you explain these three facts, these facts as they accumulate? What's the best explanation for these facts? I would suggest, and you may say I'm biased, and in one sense I am, because I know and love Jesus Christ. But the more I look at the gospel, the more it convinces me, not the less. I would suggest these facts as they accumulate suggest that the best explanation for them is not lots of weird and wacky theories that people sometimes come up with, but that Jesus of Nazareth died and did actually historically in space and time rise from the dead. What about the fourth fact? I'll finish with this one. It's the last one. You've probably possibly been waiting for it and wonder if I'll mention it. It's the big one. It's the elephant in the room. Fact four, the tomb was empty. So, fact one, Jesus died by crucifixion. Fact two, the disciples really believed he rose from the dead. Fact three, look at skeptics and Jesus haters who came to believe in him. Fact four, the tomb that Jesus' body was put in was empty by Sunday. He was put in it dead on Friday, and by Sunday it was empty. Gary Habermas, one scholar, having researched all the literature, his conservative estimate is that 75% of scholars of all persuasions accept that the tomb was empty. The Jewish leaders who arranged for Jesus to be crucified by the Romans, according to the New Testament and according to other sources as well, the Jewish leaders circulated the story that the disciples had stolen the body from the tomb. Why did they circulate that story? Why didn't they just produce the body to show everybody, look, these Christians are nuts, Jesus is dead? Well, they didn't produce the body because they couldn't, because the body wasn't there. So everybody, whether they believe that Jesus rose from the dead or not, pretty much everybody agrees, yet that tomb was empty. How do you explain that? Well, of course, the Jewish leaders explained it. And some people today, lots of Jews today, still explain it by saying the disciples stole the body. Does that explanation stack up? When you think about it, picture the scenario. You're one of the 11 remaining disciples. You've seen your Lord and Master crucified, die horribly. You've seen him put in the grave. You are defeated, depressed, dejected. You're sat down, I don't know, maybe by the Sea of Galilee, maybe around a table, and then one of you says, I know what we'll do. We'll go and steal Jesus' body and pretend he's risen from the dead. And having said that, you then go and overpower the Roman soldiers who were guarding the tomb. So this is 11 dejected fishermen, dejected disciples, many of whom were fishermen, not soldiers. They overpower the Roman guards at the tomb. They roll back the massive stone. They steal the corpse. They hide the corpse. They start proclaiming to Jerusalem and the whole world, actually, that Jesus has risen from the dead. And they go on proclaiming that truth day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, for the rest of their lives, and they never recant, and they never change their mind, and they're persecuted for it. And in fact, of those 11 disciples, most of them died because they proclaimed that Jesus had risen from the dead. How does that theory sound to you? It's a big stretch. Theoretically, hypothetically, it could be true. It's not the most simple, elegant, natural explanation of that fact, is it? When you start adding all these facts up, what I'm trying to suggest to you is, just to start out your journey of fact-checking the stories of the resurrection, as they accumulate, they all indicate that the best explanation for all these facts that the majority of people accept is that Jesus Christ really did rise from the dead. Those are the four basic facts I wanted to give you tonight, or maybe remind you of. What do you think? Such an important question. With respect, I would say, if you're sat there thinking, well, I'm not sure, and it doesn't really matter, I don't really care, that's not a logical position to take. Because it's either fake news and the biggest hoax in history, in which case, reject the Bible and the Christian faith, or if it's true, think again about what that means. As you think about whether this does stand up to journalistic fact-checking or not, think about what the implications are. The implications if Jesus historically rose from the dead, which I believe, and many people in this room believe, he really did. The implications are that there is a supernatural realm. There is a God. Jesus was who he said he was, which means he was the Son of God, come to die on a cross to pay the price for the sins of people like me and you, so that we can be restored to a relationship with God and have the sure and certain hope of a wonderful future. And we can know that's true because he rose from the dead. So we can know that when we believe in him, we too will one day rise from the dead to enter into that wonderful future with him. Which reminds me, there's one other fact I just want to sneak in as I finish. Lloyd told me to be about 20 minutes, so I'm nearly there, Lloyd. Just one other sneaky fact to push in at the end on top of those other four facts. Or maybe a better thing to call it is an evidence of the resurrection. There's a lot of them, and they're sat in this room. If you're not a Christian yet, or you're not sure where you stand, and you've come with someone who claims to be a Christian, someone who follows Jesus, they are an evidence of the fact that Jesus Christ is alive. Because when you speak to them, when you talk to them, you will find out they've had an experience of him. I would suggest that I am an evidence of the fact that Jesus Christ is alive, not because I'm this wonderful, amazing, powerful person, but because I believe I met Jesus Christ at the age of 12, I won't tell you how many years ago, through faith. And he powerfully has changed my life. And I believe I have a relationship, a living relationship with Jesus Christ now. So there are all these objective historical facts you can point to. There are subjective truths too, as you look at the lives of people you know and love maybe who follow Jesus. He's real. He's alive. And believing this will transform your life. I'll just read you as I close a verse from another letter of Paul, from Romans chapter 10. Paul says this: if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And by saved, he means you will be forgiven. You will have this hope for yourself that there is life after death and you face a wonderful future simply by trusting in him. I know the church here is soon going to be running another Christianity Explored. I really encourage you, if you are interested in checking out these things, asking awkward questions about these things, to sign up for the course. Maybe you brought a friend along tonight, and one of the people in the church here, I'd really encourage you to maybe go away with a friend that you've brought and have a chat to them about what we've talked about tonight. Ask them the tricky questions. Maybe they'll be able to answer you, maybe they won't, and they'll invite you along to Christianity Explored. But if you're starting to think about these things, can I just plead with you, don't just let them go. Consider whether the resurrection is fake news or whether it's fact, and it will change your life, absolutely.